welcome to Radio Oldie, sponsored by Baillie Gifford Actual Investors. Looking beyond today's headlines, Baillie Gifford backs exceptional companies driving progress and helping investors benefit from long-term growth. Hello and welcome to Radio Oldie with me, Harry Mount, editor of The Oldie, and I'm delighted to be talking to the great Tony Adams, former captain of Arsenal and England, who has written a terrific article in The Oldie taken from his new book, 1996, Reflections on the Year That Changed My Life. And it's fantastically honest about your last drink 30 years ago, Tony. You said there's a saying in AA that if you can't remember your last drink, you haven't had it, and you remember yours incredibly well.
Yeah, it's thanks, Harry. It's an absolute pleasure to be here, and I love the way you said the great.
Is that true?
Thank you for that. But no better, no worse than any other human being out there. You know, I've been right sized in the program, and I needed to, document the last year. It'd be the last book that I do. I had to document that last year and that last drink. And I remember that my good friend who wrote the book with me, Ian Ridley, always talks about tentacles of the past. And I'm feeling a bit, this is the period where I'd be in my 44-day bender at the end of the Euros when Gareth missed that penalty and I had no defence from the first drink and found myself in gutters and wherever, you know, and I went to that place where I didn't want to be on the planet anymore. And I'm getting that loneliness, that despair. You know, it's 30 years on now, but I still get kind of twinges type of stuff.
Because of it being the 30th anniversary?
Yeah, I think so. I'm no good with anniversaries. I had a mental breakthrough when I was 39 and when I was 49, and I'm having another one now when I'm 59. So, and the anniversaries all seem, it's a good thing. I don't escape from that feeling anymore, like the, you know, when I was 29 and at the bottom and then doing that 44-day bender and the loneliness and the, you know, it was so painful and so dark and I didn't want it on the planet. It's not like that because I wanted to escape that and the booze had stopped working for me, you know. Everything had stopped. The football had stopped working for me. Sex had stopped working for me, you know. Everything had stopped working to change that sense of what I drunk for, to be honest with you, is that sense of comfortable in your own skin. You're that comfort and ease that comes with the first couple of pints and stuff, yeah, and the first match, you know, that just kind of right size, you know, and kept it. I didn't get no relief. All I got was sadness and loneliness and despair and shame. And I mentioned in the book about shame and guilt. It really took me to the bottom because I wasn't that person, you know. The way that I treated my family and friends and everything, I didn't, you know, and within drink and stuff, you know, I wasn't like that, you know. You look at me today, I wouldn't dream of doing that type of stuff to my family and friends and people that I love.
And it was the drink that was doing it, was it?
Well, I think I suffer from an illness, you know. So I was using alcohol, like I use football, to change the way that I felt. Because this comfort and ease goes a long way. Because I was really, as a child, you know, 12, 13, 14 years of age, you know, uncomfortable in my own skin. I thought I was ugly. The self-loathing, you know, I didn't like myself, you know. And I got on the football pitch and all of a sudden, you're like, well, I come to life, you know. The ego goes up, not the self-esteem, but the ego goes up. And all of a sudden, it changed the way that I felt. I felt like, for the older viewers, John Travolta. You know, for the new ones, I don't know, Ryan Reynolds or whatever it is. Yeah. But I felt like I was something, you know. And I was looking at external stuff to fix the inside.
But your self-esteem doesn't go up even when you're captain of England, you're captain of Arsenal, you've just got into the semi-finals of the World Cup. You're adored walking down the streets. That has no effect on the self-esteem.
I was numb. I was unconscious of thoughts and feelings in those days. You know, I didn't really acknowledge what I was doing. I never sat and reflected on anything. You know, whether it was next, you know, one at Anfield, you know, next, you know, next. Get on with it. Oh, I'm uncomfortable today. Oh, go and drink. Go and play football. Oh, I'm not uncomfortable. You know, I was falling forwards, as they say. Yeah, I think.
Great thrill if you won a game, won a championship, won an FA Cup. yeah. scored a goal. But that thrill lasts how long?
It's a fix. It's 2 minutes. I go back and get off that football pitch and I go back to the shy, insecure, full of anxiety and the fear. It's the fear, the self-centred fear. You know, it's a self illness for me. You know, the soul sickness, really. It's a soul sickness where there's something. Always felt there was something missing, you know, with inside of me, and I was chasing stuff to make that go away. And the goal here, and the header here, and the captaincy here, it never went away.
And you think you were born with that hole, do you think? Or
I think it's partly genetics. The scientists tell me that it's genetics and stuff. And the books, you know, for me, we were doing it, and I said to Ian, you know, it's going to be the last, and we're going to do it the year, because chronologically, you know, in January I put, you know, my first wife into treatment. In the February I get injured. In the March my kids get taken away. In the April I go and see James. In the May and June the championship. It's like every month there's something happening. But as I said to Ian, we can't just jump into that. You've got to lay some foundation. Why was you doing that? Because the questions that you're asking me is like, how did you get there? What you know, didn't that fix you or that fix you? Or didn't you get some self-respect for, you know, self-respect from kind of winning this or yeah. self-esteem from winning the league and stuff? So I quickly wrote 5,000 words and it's the warm-up to this. And I got it over to Ian and Ian kind of went, I got where you obviously edited it, but it's the only time and the afterwards as well. I did it a little bit afterwards while I'd actually written it. I did 30,000 words of Addicted, and Ian, we took the we ripped it up basically because I was 1998. I was 2 years clean and sober, and I've been playing football. And Ian said to me, "Listen, I've been writing all my life. Leave it to me." So we decided to rip it up and start again, really. And we put everything on tape and stuff. But I think this was needed. And it was definitely needed putting Ian first. Because the beautiful, egotistical kind of Elizabeth Taylor, the beautiful line when she says about, you know, I'm really, really bored about, you know, talking about me. What do you think of me? You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah. I thought it was important that Ian started it and he gave his reflections on the person that I am today. But I quickly went into, actually, I need 5,000 words explaining how I got there and talking about that, born with it, that genetics, that hole, that uncomfortable, that fear. All that stuff was way there before football and before booze.
Right. You know, what's before. Amazing is that...
Because it worked. See, yeah. The thing is, the alcohol worked. When I had a couple of... It changed the way that I felt, you know. I did it for... I didn't like the taste, but I did it for effect, you know, the effect. And the effect worked until it stopped working. And the year of 96, it stopped working. But at the start, there was a reason why I did it. You know, artificially, you know, I'm on fire all of a sudden. I'm dancing on the table. But the people laughing at me, but...
The remarkable thing is that you can drink very heavily and still be very, very good at football. And you obviously knew that. I mean, that's extraordinary.
So it's a progressive illness. So, you know, I picked up that only... 17, I picked up at 17 when I was injured. So summers was fueled with, I always look at footballers today and I look in the summer and then the ones that are going on in the papers and getting drunk, I go, that really does tell a tale or two. But I was doing that only injured or when I wasn't playing. So it started on a Saturday night straight after. You work all week, normal people, so the progressing of the illness changed the way that I felt on a Saturday night. Oh, hallelujah. Went into Sunday lunchtime, all of a sudden Sunday evening, and I was drinking midweek. You know, I had the Tuesday club, the famous Tuesday club where we always used to go out with a drink. I had a Monday and a Thursday club as well, you know what I mean? They didn't see that. I was playing darts on a Monday. All of a sudden, over the 5 years and 6 years, it was escalating, you know. I was getting more and more used to I had to take more and more of the drug to get that comfort and ease, you know. I had to chasing it and trying to get out of self again, you know. I always say this, it's really interesting that we won the league in 91 and we didn't win the league again until I sobered up. And I think it was draining me physically, it was draining me. And there was a lot of booze within the game of that, so it hid a lot of stuff. hid, and no one knew. I spoke to Gary Lewin, who I got before I wrote the book,
Arsenal physio.
Yeah. And I said, Gary, he said, we didn't know anything about it, Tom. You know, I've learned so many lessons from you. We didn't, you know, go back to the early 90s. He said, I didn't have a clue how you were drinking and stuff. You know, it was
because you were good at keeping it quiet, and you also.
I think if I wasn't good, Harry, I think I'd been out of the game. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. They would have kicked me down the road. You know.
Yeah. But you did go through a long period, I think, call it white knuckling, of not drinking before Euro '96.
I was in prison in 1990. You know what I mean? You know, it took me six more years to get in there. You know, such a denial within society, an addiction. You know, you don't want to. I'm very proud to be a recovered alcoholic now today, but. You're still full of stigma, and you're like, oh, it's a weakness. It's viewed as a weakness, you know. And it's like, wow, you can't take your drink. What's wrong with you? You know what I mean? You're not a man, you know. You're chasing all that.
If small ship cruising around Scotland appeals, or you've been curious since hearing about Hebridean Island cruises on Radio Aldie, this might be the moment to take a look. Hebridean Princess explores the Western Islands and coastline, and Lord of the Highlands winds through the Highlands and Caledonian Canal, both in genuine all-inclusive luxury for fewer than 50 guests. Cabins are still available on selected sailings this summer and autumn, with up to 20% off, plus standard UK rail or air travel to the ship included. Visit hebridean.co.uk or call the team on 01756 704
704. Now, funny for someone who was so full of shame, you're now staggeringly honest. So when you were doing this article, I asked you and your wife, Poppy, do you mind if I put the stuff in about the drinking and the girls and the drugs? And you go, no, just do anything. That's quite a big change, isn't it, from someone who is ashamed of things. Mm. To it all being out there.
Because I don't do it today, it's a history. You know, we put in there, I was pulled up by the members of the public, the press, and they said, you're using prostitute in the book. And I said, no, only when I'm sick. I said, I call them sex workers, yeah. Appropriately, you know, to turn the time. I don't, see, I'm not doing the stuff today. You know, I've cleared up that side of the street, you know, so I can walk, and I'm very proud of how I've changed. It's completely foreign to me now. There's no way. My recovery's contingent on my spiritual program, and I have to keep doing the stuff. You know, I have to keep talking with good people and my winners, and you know, going to AA and working with a sponsor, and I've got a great therapist and blah blah blah. I keep that. I will never drink again because I've got the tools. I've got the tools now, so I'm quite competent that I can shout from the rooftops. And when, if it, you know, the shame and the guilt, and you ask my wife, she's never seen me drink. She doesn't know that person. Right. You know, she don't know that person. So it's like someone's kind of foreign. She's like, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, You know. So, and she, if I reacted like that, I don't think she would be with me today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, that shows you how sick. You know, my first wife and I were, you know, we were so sick, you know, it was so toxic. We were killing each other, really killing each other, you know, and there was no communication. It was fights and scraps and better than worse and superiority, inferiority, propping myself up with my emotions, you know, all this unconscious, all this sick, you know, we weren't communicating how we feel today and stuff. It's changed. So, I can do it because I know there's going to be people like that now that are suffering, that are at the end of their addiction, and I know the power of it, because when I didn't want to get well, I would go, no, but it's this little seed crept in through my 8 months of research, you know, little things like I saw the steps when I put my first wife into, I nearly said prison there. She went to prison as well, but when she went into rehab and I looked up and there were steps there, and then people would say things, and then, you know, I went to see James and he went, you know, and little kind of things coming up, and I was walking around these streets and I put in the book a year clean and sober. Actually, I met the girl that I slept with on the night before. You know, it's like, what, weird, something's happening here, you know, something's really creeping in.
And it was quite weird. I know quite a few recovering alcoholics that you stopped like that because you said it no longer had any effect, and that was it. There was no suggestion of relapse at all.
No, and I'm one of the lucky ones because I still go to meetings, you know, three or four a week, and I hear people's journeys. I put it down to there's two things that we say in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like a spiritual experience and a spiritual awakening. And I think a few people go to meetings, keep going back, keep going back before they get the awakening. For me, it was an experience. You know, Bill W., who started AA, co-founder, you know, he had an experience. He had a light bulb moment, literally in his kitchen. The light went on and it... Poof. I had that sitting in a social club on, you know, August the 16th, when divine intervention, spiritual experience, it's just words at the end of the day. I just cried and I went somewhere inside. These are just words, I know, but I asked for help. I asked for help, and the compulsion to drink left me at that very moment.
Amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That for me is, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's my higher power today. But, because I could thought that I could do it my way, and I quickly had to be broken enough to go. Because my favourite words as a kid, I know, I knew everything, I knew nothing, you know what I mean? And I was finally broken mentally, emotionally. You know, I was a young man, so maybe not physically, I was still there,
yeah,
hanging on in there. But I actually surrendered, and what do you know, the compulsion to... But I didn't know how to stay stopped. You know, that's the human bit. That's the bit where I had to get going and do the steps and work with a sponsor and go into the rooms and keep coming back and blah, 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 blah. I needed to take some action. It's the great thing about what they say. I don't know if I put it in the book, but they say you're only you can do it, but you can't do it alone. So I need other people.
Right. And you set up your
paradox
charity, Sporting Chance. And then you've written very openly about your son, Ollie, who was an alcoholic but is now recovering too.
Yeah, he's 3 years, 27th of July. He came to me. I watched him trying to kill himself like me, I suppose. It's a slow way to go, isn't it? Booze, but he was a few pills as well, you know, and he's got the sickness. But I was just waiting, you know. Every time I put them, you know, a number up on his door. We had conversations in China once, and he was banging denial like I was back in the day, you know, denial.
And you had rows, didn't you? Because you could see what was happening.
Yeah, of course, and you have to, you know, just be there when they're ready. And I thank God, you know, he came home and, excuse my language, but he said, I'm fucked. I think there's no other word to kind of describe it, really. And I said, hallelujah, thank God for that. You know, he had a bit of a surrender moment. And I took him to a meeting, gave him a big book, said, there's your sponsor, American Patrick, get on with it.
So
take responsibility for your own recovery. And yeah, it gets me teary even now. You know, it's quite beautiful.
Yeah, wonderful. And so you think
there is
a strong genetic aspect, you'd say?
I think without doubt. I think, that, you know, the scientists say about 40% is in your DNA. My father, my mother, my grandfather, you know, all kind of addicts.
Yeah.
You know, there's big... You know. I also think you need to do some trauma in there as well, you know, that triggers it. I think I had enough triggering experiences and trauma experiences within the 12 years of drinking that like I say again, it's a shame of doing certain stuff when you're waking up with people you don't want to be with and you're turning people and you owe money everywhere. I mean, you're doing some, you know, degrading stuff, you know, and not fulfilling who you are. As you know, when we got knocked out in the World Cup, I was looking at that really with my kind of World Cup, reflecting on it, and I said, 86 I was too young. 1990 I was too drunk. I think after my 88 Euro experience, I think Bobby Robson looked at it and went, he's not for me, you know what I mean? He's getting too pissed too much. And I went down to 25 and he released me right at the end. And I think it was because of 88, you know, I pissed the bed regular in 88 after every match, you know, and he was very aware of my antics. Because I was Arsenal captain. I won two trophies, you know, in 89 and 91. You know, why are you not taking the Arsenal captain, the championship captain? Yeah. There's got to be something else going on. So I think 94 we didn't qualify. And I was banging the drinking at that point as well. And then 98 when I cleared, that was my big chance. And then Bex went and blew it for us. and we laugh at that story. I just did it to show you. When I went into the dressing room, he was full of tears and stuff. And I said, look, you know. I pretty much knew probably it was my last chance, and I said, you're a young man, you've got plenty more goes at it, but it, you know, you've really blown it for me.
He must have loved that.
He did, but it kind of shook him out of that, and you know, I really admired the way that he did it, and I shared my experience of 88 with him anyway. But I was just reflecting, and I was too old for 2002, so you know, my Euro is a different, but it's really interesting. I had to get clean and sober, and luckily, because it doesn't happen that people get recovery within, I'll go on from here, but recovery during their playing days. You know, I had another 6 years of more success.
Helped by Arsene Wenger was good on food.
Of course, he was brilliant. I was 6 weeks clean and sober when he walked through the door. You know, his mum and dad used to run a pub in Strasbourg. He saw the way that alcohol affected people. I think he's got character strength, you know, addictive character strength, is that what it's called? Within him, you know, I think he's...
obsession, do you mean?
Yeah, I think there's one character trait, that's it, not strength, trait, is that you can't let go. You know, everything that I've ever let go of, including the booze and football, it's got claw marks in. You know, and I think he was very similar at the Arsenal. I think it was his life, and he found it incredibly difficult to walk away from that. You know, and it does cost you because it's a very selfish industry, and his family life. Anyway, that's his journey. But he definitely helped me. It was like when the pupil's ready, the teacher appears. You know, and that was the case for me. You know, I walked in that door, and I was ready. I opened up. And he didn't have to do anything but listen and have a cup of tea with me every morning. And we had a beautiful 6 years. But I thought it was as a bit of a trailblazer to go into recovery, shout it from the rooftops. I got outed anyway, so I didn't have no choice about my anonymity. You talk about all this stuff that I'm open and honest with. It's been redone. Yeah. You know, everyone knows my stuff. Yeah. It's like Poppy said to me, I'm probably not going to bother reading it because I'm... same old stuff. Yeah. And I went, okay, darling, yeah, I won't read your 16th century essay on
Fair
women's.
Enough.
It's powerful stuff. And
and Tony, you talk about Arsene leaving Arsenal. With you retiring, you once said to me you didn't miss playing in front of 50,000 people, but you did miss actually playing football. So actually we're talking on the eve of another semi-final, England-Argentina in the World Cup. When you watch games like that or watch the World Cup, do you find yourself missing playing enormously?
No, I did what I had a, you know, I did everything I wanted to do. I played for my country, you know, on home territory, you know, against the Germans in the semi-final. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience. I'm very blessed with that, you know, and getting clean and sober and being, you know, getting two more doubles for the Arsenal. It was absolutely beautiful, you know. We had parade after parade. My boys went to the Arsenal parade. I said, to be honest with you, I've done 10 of them. Oh, I'm sorry, I don't mean to be kind of... It is what it is, you know, and I got very lucky, so I don't miss it at all.
And had as full a career as you possibly could.
Exactly,
have.
Yeah. I had me day, and I wish them all the best, you know, and get, you know, please God that you, you know, you fulfil your careers. I just... yeah, I don't sit there kind of go... And I've never been a fan, which makes it a little bit kind of, you know...
Even as a boy, you weren't a fan?
I looked at playing, I was a bit weird. Even, you know, 6 years of age, I was looking at Billy Bonds and Willie Young and Dave O'Leary and Alvin Martin and all these, Terry Butcher and all these, you know, Kevin Beattie at Ipswich, all these central defenders that I wanted to be like, yeah. And but I looked at them and I, oh, he's doing, he's like that, he's marking him like that, he's heading the ball like that. Oh, he's brilliant from set plays. It was not the game. Go on Ipswich, go on Arsenal, right. Go on Norwich, right. You know, going to watch them, cheering on your, right. Your players. It was never like that for me. It was a job from the start, really. It was a job from the start and a job that I loved and got paid for it and I loved it a bit. And I had a 23-year, 79, I joined the Arsenal. 2002, I left them. I played for England for 13 years, you know, kept in my country at home, you know. Move on.
Pretty good.
It's not my time.
Yeah. Well, that's a very good place to stop. And thank you so much to Tony Adams for talking about his fantastic book, 1996, Reflections on the Year That Changed My Life.
This week's podcast was kindly sponsored by Baillie Gifford Actual Investors, who take a long-term approach to investing in exceptional companies.